Ah. No. You heard about the new hotel?
I can't go back to Utah.
Of course you can. You just jump on the 15, you head northeast about... Not in a joking mood. Okay. It's about your dad?
Holidays, Twim Nation. It is the Twim Sisters here, Tiffany Hales
and Ariane Smith,
and we are right in the middle of the festive month of December.
Yes, we made it through the holidays.
Exactly.
Thanksgiving holiday.
And Thanksgiving is in our rearview mirror, and Christmas is forging ahead. So we are here today to share all things that mean absolutely nothing to anybody at all.
Unless you're Mormon. They might mean a little bit.
They might mean...
I don't know. Who knows?
Very true.
Who knows?
Anyway, a lot has happened since we last were here. So
lots of events, activities.
Exactly.
Temple dedication.
Exactly.
Prince Harry's engaged.
Ooh, I know. We're going to have an American princess. Who'd have thunk?
I know. So many people care about that, but we really care.
Okay, you know, this is really morbid of me, but I'm going to tell you my very morbid thought.
What?
My very morbid thought is I was like, okay, if William and Kate and their kids are all traveling on a plane together somewhere, you know, on some royal tour and the plane goes down, wow, we really have, now we don't have an American princess, we have an American queen.
That is a morbid
thought. It is a morbid thought.
Look at where your mind goes.
I know. But not only is she going to be an American princess, she's biracial, which is very, I mean, that just adds, and she's very proud to be biracial, I might add. And so I just think, you know, what could be more American than that?
She's fun. It's fun to watch. My husband, like, takes no part in this. He thinks it's completely ridiculous. But my sister-in-law, did the best Facebook post. She was just like, everybody, I'm going to be obsessed with this for the next little while here, and you can deal with it, because I'm sick of reading about all the harassment and the politics in the news, so I'm just going to focus on this. And I was like, yes.
I saw that Facebook post, and I did. I really respected her for that. I'm like, you go, girl.
I totally respect that decision. I'm on board.
All right. So as we stated, we have one holiday in the rear, Thanksgiving, and you and your family came over to my house for Thanksgiving.
Yep. It was a good time.
We had
great food.
Delicious food. And then, of course, you and I did our traditional Black Friday shopping.
On Thursday. I know we're those people that everybody gripes about that goes out on Thursday. But my theory is, I would much rather go out late on a Thursday night than wake up at 5 a.m. That's never going to happen.
Amen. So. Plus, the men are still awake, and we can leave the children with the men and make the men responsible for the children. And we are those crazy people who usually the first place we hit is Walmart. And we have Walmart down to a system on Black Friday.
Yeah. Well, you do. You are the only one. I would never do Black Friday without Tiffany, because Tiffany can get you in, get you out in like 5 minutes or less at Walmart. I'm not even kidding. Like, if I were on my own, I would be a little lost sheep wandering through that store going, what do I do? Where do I go? Where's the stuff? But she goes in. She has like a plan. She tells you where to stand. She puts you there and says, meet me at the register after you get your stuff.
You need to grab this, and then you need to go over there and grab that. The other key to Black Friday at Walmart is don't get a cart. A cart just gets in the way. So you figure out how many people it's going to take to carry the things that you need without a cart. But then it's always wise to like store a cart somewhere, like in the pet food section,
hidden
where
carts.
Nobody is.
Yes.
So that then you all meet up at the cart and you dump your stuff into the cart at that point in time. But if you're trying to navigate the Black Friday deals with a cart, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. So it was fun. We stayed out a few hours.
We did.
Had a good time.
We did.
Got some Christmas shopping done.
We had a lot of fun. So,
yes.
And that brings me to my next thing that I want to talk about is seasonal music.
Oh,
and I'm
yes.
first going to start with church seasonal music.
You have very strong feelings on this.
I have.
you were upset around Thanksgiving time.
I was. So we have some absolutely beautiful Thanksgiving hymns. Now, granted, there's not a ton of them, but there's four of them. So if there's four Thanksgiving hymns, that should give you at least two Sundays worth of Thanksgiving music.
Right.
So we started out the first Sunday in November and we sang a couple of Thanksgiving hymns. I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to sing Thanksgiving hymns all month long. No. The next Sunday after that, we were back to regular hymns. Then the Sunday after that was the temple dedication. So I knew we weren't going to have Thanksgiving hymns then. But I thought, well, at least we'll get Thanksgiving hymns the Sunday after Thanksgiving. No. No, we didn't. Not the Sunday after. I was totally cheated on my Thanksgiving hymns this year.
I can't remember if our ward did it the Sunday after. I don't think I was paying attention. But I do love the Thanksgiving hymns.
Well, then clearly you don't love them as much as I do.
Okay, so has your ward started in on Christmas yet?
Yes.
Has ours started, like last Sunday?
Yes, last Sunday we started it on Christmas. But given the fact that we hit the ground running at November with Thanksgiving, it would not surprise me this week if we go back to regular hymns. And then I'm even going to be more bitter. Because, yes, there's only four Thanksgiving hymns, but there's like a slew of Christmas hymns in there.
Yeah, you've got to sing all those Christmas hymns.
Exactly. Exactly. So do you have a favorite one that's in the book?
Let's see. What do I like? You know what? I really like Once in Royal David City.
Really? Yes. See, that's not one of my favorites. I'm a big fan of I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day.
Oh, really? Oh, that one's hard to sing.
It is hard to
sing.
I'm
not a fan just because I can't sing it, but it doesn't take much for me to not be able to sing a hymn. I'm not, you know.
Well, I can't sing any hymns, so it really doesn't matter. But we have a really good organist in our ward, and so he does the whole bell action on I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day when we sing that every year. So it is kind of tradition we sing it. So.
Oh, that's fancy.
Anyway, and one other quick note on seasonal music. Just tonight, in fact, TWIM's Joseph Peterson, he's a great contributor to TWIM, posted an article on the TWIM website about seasonal music and Christmas music. And I'm going to encourage everybody to go read his article, because what he's talking about is he's talking about the music scene in Provo. And believe it or not, Provo has this really kind of hipster kind of music scene down there. And there's a lot of bands that have, you know, started out there and even become big, like Imagine Dragons. And so for the last 4 years, 2014, 15, 16, and 17, what Provo City has done is Provo City has had local artists record music, and they not only record a Christmas song, but they also do a video with it. And you can find the video on YouTube. And then they sell a download of the album for past years are $5, the current year is $10, and all of the proceeds go to the United Way.
Oh, that's cool.
And I went on YouTube tonight and I looked at some of the videos, and they're really cool. If you really like, you know, kind of acoustic guitar and really original music, you know, with a hymn or with a Christmas song that you're familiar with.
So they're familiar Christmas songs, just different takes on them.
Yes, okay. Exactly. One artist was playing the harp, and I'm trying to remember which song she was playing the harp to. And then there was another artist who did a piano solo on, which one was it? I Saw Three Ships Come Sailing In.
Oh.
So very just kind of different take on Christmas hymns, not what you hear on the radio all the time.
See, I would love that. I need to get on and listen, because I always like something different, because I get so tired of the same songs on the radio.
Exactly. So, and speaking of Christmas, that brings us to the church's Light the World campaign.
Oh, right. The Light the World. So everybody needs to keep checking This Week in Mormon's website, because there are posts every day to go along with the Light the World campaign, which has been great. I got to admit, I have mixed feelings about the Light the World campaign, but it's my own personal issue.
Okay. What is your issue
here? It is a me problem. Okay. I love the Light the World campaign. I think it's a great idea. It's fabulous. It's getting people to focus on Christ for Christmas. But I really, as a mom, have to reel in the mom guilt with the Light the World campaign. I don't know if anybody else feels this or it's just me. I feel like I don't, in general, have a lot of mom guilt. I don't compare myself to others very often.
You're very good about that.
I really don't harbor a lot of mom guilt, but I do have a push button topic for mom guilt, and it's like teaching my children gospel principles, not even just gospel principles, teaching my children to be good people.
Yes.
It's my trigger.
So So explain to us what you mean by that's your trigger, because I think you're very good at teaching your children gospel principles.
Well, I try. Everybody's trying, but I think that's the one area where I always feel not as confident.
Oh, okay.
And so when I see this what beautiful list that has come out of activities that we could do every day to remember the Savior and light the world, I get super excited. And then I sit down and look at the list and how is it going to fit into my crazy everyday schedule of, you know, kids and school and homework and, you know, reading scriptures every night, the things that we're just barely surviving to fit into our schedule.
I get that.
And I just get a little overwhelmed and then I do none of it.
Because you're too overwhelmed.
And then I feel mom guilt because I should be teaching my children that the Christmas season is about the Savior.
It's not about going to Target and saying, I want this and this and this and this.
Yes. So I struggle. And then I really, this is the only time where I really have a tough time, like, not comparing myself to others, because I'll see great friends post online, like, the wonderful, amazing things that they're doing with the Light the World campaign, which is great. And so I really, this is a problem with myself.
Yes.
I really have to check myself and say, look, they are sharing water and hot cocoa with their community, and that is wonderful. Do not feel bad if you're not.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, and you know what? And that's a hard balance. That's a hard balance to reach where, you know, you to not feel guilty about not being able to do every little thing and to realize, but and not feeling overwhelmed and not doing anything, but looking at the big picture of the 25 days and saying, look, I can't do 25 days, but maybe I can do 4 days.
Right.
And so let's pick 4 days.
That's kind of what I've had to do. I've kind of just had to look at our calendar and say, you know, we can talk about it at night here and there, and I can print out the calendar that the girls can look and see. But as far as an organized family effort, we're just going to pick a couple, you know, two or three things that we can actually do. And if the girls want to do more on their own, that's fine. But I can't have like an evening devotional to discuss it. So I've had to let go. This is a personal problem. I'm overcoming.
Well, I as your older and wiser sister, am going to give you permission to just let go of all the guilt. Just let go of all the mom guilt and just realize I can only do what I can do.
Right. That's right. But I do, it's a great idea and it's a wonderful campaign. And believe me, I love any help I can get.
Yes.
And I love how organized it is, and it has a list of, you know, grown-up ideas, and it has a great list of activities that
for kids,
kid-friendly, that you could implement into your lives. So anyways. Well,
and maybe it's as simple as just reading the Twin Post every day.
Right.
The Light the World Twin Post.
There you go. If that's all you can fit in,
then read
the post.
Yes, because the Twin Posts are written by various contributors to TWIM, myself included. And so you're going to get a variety of different writing styles and opinions and just run the gamut of contributors from TWIM in reading the Twin Posts. So.
Right. It's kind of fun. So
okay.
Okay, we have to talk about last week.
We have to talk about Al
in the
and
podcast.
Jeff's podcast last week.
They interviewed Peter Breinholt.
Peter Breinholt.
It was a great interview. You should go back and listen
if
you haven't heard it. But in their opening, Al shared some exciting news with us.
Well, both Jeff and Al shared exciting news with us.
That's right. So Jeff recently had a baby.
I believe he said it was a boy.
A boy. Second baby
second,
for him.
Second baby. Second boy.
And then Al, he must have figured out how nosy we are because he preemptively shared without us even harassing him for this information.
Exactly. And he did give a shout out to the sisters because he said, I know the ladies are going to want to know.
I know.
But he said that he was joining the fatherhood ranks in a few months.
Right. So congratulations, Al.
Yes.
We are so happy for you. Also, we want to say that we will meet your baby and we will match you a baby.
It's true.
Because I'm expecting.
Yes! Yay!
It's like a little TWIM baby boom happening here.
It is a TWIM baby boom. So three of the four regular TWIM hosts now either have had or are expecting very small screaming children.
That's right. That's right. So this will be baby number four for us and coming next spring.
Yes. And I'm so excited. And folks, let me just rest assure everybody, this host right here will not be recreating, will not be creating any more children. We're full up. That ship has sailed.
That's right. The baby boom ends here.
The baby boom ends here. All right. Let's briefly touch on the Meridian Temple. Our last episode, we were deep in the throngs of the open house for the Meridian Temple, telling hilarious stories. And since then, we've had the cultural celebration and we've had the dedication. So we won't spend too long on this, but we do want to just kind of give a little follow-up on what we thought.
Right. So cultural celebration, you got to go.
Yes. Or as we like to call it. We have a culture, I'm sure of it, also known as
Dancing for Jesus.
So the theme of the cultural celebration was be strong, be steadfast, and immovable. And they really did a great job with this. And the reason that they picked that theme is because it stems from the name and location of the new temple. In early Idaho, the surveyors used an initial point, which is a steadfast and immovable line from which to take all other measurements. And so the city of Meridian was named for this point, and there is a meridian that runs true north. And that was one of the things that President Updorf focused on when he was at the cultural celebration, was the true north, right, and encouraging the youth to follow the true north. And so the theme, they had a grandpa who was a surveyor, and he was visiting with his grandchildren, and he had a trunk full of treasures, and he would pull out his treasure and they would talk about each treasure and how that treasure related to the development of the Boise Valley, also known as the Treasure Valley. And then a stake would come out and do a song and a dance.
It was quite the production. And there was quite the variety. We had cloggers.
We had cloggers.
It is Idaho. There were lots of pioneer costumes.
Oh, people were dusting off their trek gear.
But you know what my favorite was? I think it might have been the very opening number. They had like this bluegrass band made up of kids.
Yes.
Fiddle, banjo, guitar.
Yes.
They were amazing.
They were really good.
That was like the best.
They were really good.
Let's have them play through the whole thing.
Exactly. So. Yes. They were great. And I really loved their theme song. They had a theme song that was entitled Be Strong, Be Steadfast, and Immovable, that they wrote specifically for this cultural celebration. And I'm hoping that someone will slap it up on iTunes so I can buy it, because it was a really good song. It reminded me a lot of the EFY themes that they do every year, but it was a great song. And for the temple dedication, we had President Updorf, and he came with Elder D. Todd Christofferson. And they were all at the cultural celebration. And then we also had Bishop Gerald Casas. I'm not sure how his last name is pronounced.
I don't know.
I never took French. and then we had some 70s. We had Elder Ulysses Sories. And then we had Kevin R. Duncan. And we had Edward Dube. Anyway, so we had 370s. Mm-hmm. But what was really, really interesting to watch at the cultural celebration is, so President Updorf comes in, and of course his wife is behind him, and then he's followed by D. Todd and all of these other 70s. And likewise, when he exits, they exit in that same order. So he comes into the Taco Bell arena, you know, the kids are screaming and, you know, waving at him and trying to shake his hand. And he literally had rock star status.
Oh, yeah. People were going crazy.
People were flipping out. And the funny thing was D. Todd, oh, nobody cared about him. 70s? 70 who, you know? I mean, you could see him shaking D. Todd's hand going, oh, all right, but, you know, you're not the Silver Fox. So it was hilarious to watch, because I'm sure in any other setting, when Elder Christofferson goes out as a member of the Quorum of the 12, you know, he gets treated, you know, rock star. I wouldn't say rock star status, but, you know, it's a big deal for the Saints, but no. It wasn't a big deal. Everybody wanted Updorf. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it was It was funny.
And the other really interesting thing that I saw with the cultural celebration is there were a number of pictures online afterwards. And there was a lady from our stake that did a lot of photography. Mm-hmm. Her name is Fabiana, and she was there taking pictures. And so a bunch of her pictures were posted on Facebook. And so she was, some of her pictures, she was kind of behind the area where the general authorities were seated and looking out onto the floor where the kids were. And you could see in several of her pictures, Sister Oopdorf, she's mm-hmm. holding up her camera and she has her cell phone and she's snapping pictures of these kids on her personal camera. It was so cute.
That is cute.
And then at the end, Fabiana had a picture looking at mm-hmm. President Oopdorf and his wife. And Sister Oopdorf has her glasses kind of up on her head and she's wearing a scarf and she's dabbing her eyes because she was so touched and so moved by this cultural celebration.
Oh, that's
so
sweet.
I loved that picture. So
that's sweet.
Hats off to the kids and their cultural celebration. They did a great job. And then, of course, the next day was the dedication. Mm-hmm. We did three sessions of the dedication. There were, you know, you could go, well, those who got tickets could go to the temple and then everybody else went to their stake center. But what was really interesting that day is at the temple for the dedication, they had protesters out there.
Oh, even at the dedication?
Even at the dedication.
Because they know they were there for like
yes.
all of the open house.
For all of the open house, protesters mm-hmm. were there. In fact, we even heard a story that one of the, that on one particular day, a protester was there and that protester was wearing temple clothing.
I heard that. I didn't see that. Oh.
I didn't see that either. You know, I can deal with the protesters.
Right.
You know, you're free to have your opinion. But when you wear the temple clothing out there protesting, that just, that's hard for me to swallow. That just really crosses a line. But I also don't get the protesters. I would not want to spend my Saturday standing out on the street corner protesting somebody else's religion. I have so many better things to do in my life, like watch Real Housewives, than do that.
That's right.
Anyway, so,
oh,
but
goodness.
Yeah, it was kind of funny seeing the protesters at the temple because you think to yourself, well, you know, this maybe isn't the right crowd.
Right. It's a little too late now.
You might not have a whole lot of success with the crowd who's at the temple for the dedication.
Right.
But all in all, the temple is dedicated. It's up. It's functioning.
It's up and running.
It's up and running.
Yep.
I'm going to say one really quick thing about it that I think is very cool. And then we will cease and desist for a while on the Meridian
yes.
Temple. Because you guys are probably on
probably
overload.
Getting sick of it. Yeah.
So the first day that it was open was a Tuesday, and uh-huh. it was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, and so the kids were out of school that day all throughout the valley. First, one of Shelby's friends showed up at 3:30 in the morning to get in line to do
what?
Baptisms. I know. This was like Black Friday for
Are
the
you
teenagers.
Kidding me?
Oh, I kid you not. And he was not the first one in line.
Oh,
and
my
they
goodness.
They had kids just lined up the door, out the door all day long there at the temple waiting to do baptisms.
Oh, I had
kids,
no idea.
Yeah, kids stood in line for hours to be able to get in and do baptisms that first day in the Meridian Temple.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes me feel guilty. I haven't even done a session yet because I've been waiting till the crowds die down.
Exactly. But yeah, I thought that was so neat that the kids would have
cool.
that kind of dedication to get up and do that. And, you know, especially because if it took them a while, they, you know, they had all day. So,
right, yeah.
Kudos to the teenagers.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Oh, we've got to hit on Dancing with the Stars really
yes.
quick because it ended and Lindsay Sterling came in second, which... Well represented. She did great.
Yes. And so the first place winner was Lindsay Arnold and her partner, Jordan Fisher.
Right.
And we discussed, you know, in the last episode, you know, it was an all Mormon finale.
Right. It was a sweep.
It was a sweep for the Mormons.
The third place winner.
And I really did. If Lindsay Sterling couldn't win, I wanted Lindsay Arnold to win because she did a great job and Jordan Fisher did a great job and she deserved a Mirrorball trophy and... It was all good.
It was fun to watch. I'm anxiously waiting to see who the next Mormon celebrity will be on
there. I know.
So, I wonder how long we'll have to wait.
Exactly. So. Maybe we ought to tell Jeff to dust off his dancing shoes.
That would be awesome.
Yes, it would.
All right. Oh, and we had the Elizabeth Smart movie that came out right before Thanksgiving. We talked about it before on the podcast, and we were both anxious to watch it.
And
did you watch it?
I didn't. I did not watch it. You know, in association with the movie, they had several specials. A&E had a really good special on her.
Yeah, and that's the one I watched.
I loved the A&E special.
It was a documentary.
Yes.
It was really good. Lots of details that I had totally forgotten about the case.
Well, and they did interviews with her family and her siblings. And the last time we really saw some members of her family, especially her siblings, they were little kids.
Right.
They are grown up now. I mean, we saw a grown up Mary Catherine.
Yes.
And that was really interesting to me. And it was well put together. I have not had a chance to see the movie yet, but you started watching the movie.
I was telling you this last week. I started to watch the dramatization, the Lifetime movie with the actors.
The one where she narrates.
Right. She narrates and it has the actors. My husband and I, we probably got maybe 10 minutes in and we just had to turn it off. It was so dark. I mean, it was just, and that's what her story was. But I just couldn't make it through it. It was
really,
it was just too hard to watch.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the documentary, like her describing it, I think it was just the dramatization was... It was intense.
Yeah, because she participated in the A&E documentary.
Right,
This was not an unauthorized documentary.
Right, yeah. So I did not finish the Lifetime movie. So you'll have to give it a try.
I'll have to see if I can stomach it more. We'll just have to see. Because like I said, I really did like the documentary. So
All right. Should we do some news stories?
Let's do some news stories.
Mormons in the news.
So the big one this week, of course, is President Trump made himself a little stop to Utah.
Yes.
So he went there to talk about some national monuments and to reclaim some land that I think had previously been given away. And no trip to Utah is complete without paying homage to the real leaders of Utah, which is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
That's right. You got to schmooze.
You start with the government, but then you end with the real power broker.
It's very true. So, okay, I think my favorite thing about this, I mean, really the only thing I loved about this, let's be honest, was This Week in Mormons put a picture on the Facebook page. Jeff and Al put this up. And it's a picture of Trump at Welfare Square at the Bishop's Storehouse, shaking hands with President Eyring and surrounded by other church leaders. And he's pushing a shopping cart. And he's in between the aisles of groceries at the Bishop's Storehouse.
Well, and this is clearly a staged photo op.
Right.
Oh. And this was released for the media because if you haven't seen the picture, President Trump has this cart full of groceries that
like
he's pushing around.
Shopping. Yeah.
Like he's ever... grocery shop.
So
I want to know, did somebody have to give him directions as to how the cart works?
Probably.
Because I'm pretty sure he's never been in a grocery store pushing a cart around, picking things off the shelves.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So you look at the end display. There's an end display in the picture.
Right.
Like everything is face forward. The labels are all going the right direction.
So perfect.
So perfect.
Not a jar is out of place.
Exactly.
Exactly. So I love this. Jeff and Al put it up on the Facebook page, on the Twin Facebook page, and said, caption this. And there are some funny, once again, the Twim listeners come through with their wittiness. And
Twim Nation, you're brilliant.
And clever comments. So I just have to read my all-time favorite after reading through these. And there's lots of great ones. But this one, Aaron Fairchild wrote, this is his caption for the picture. So this is what it feels like to go grocery shopping. Thank you, Mr. Glasses, for this tremendous experience. By the way, did you know that more people attended my inauguration than watched the Super Bowl this past year? It was an amazing and unprecedented. Also, Hillary's a loser. Oh, and Comey is a liar, and Putin is a great guy. Wait, where am I?
I did like that one. There was another one. There was a meme that somebody had taken and put on the picture. It says, we're glad to help this month, President Trump. But before your next food order, we would like to sit down and go over your budget. I thought that one was funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's scroll down and find some other ones that we liked because there were some good ones here. There was lots about Mexican Mormons who produce the food.
Right. Yeah, and there was one about cleaning the church, like in exchange for receiving food.
Exactly.
Will you be there to clean the church on Saturday?
Exactly. Then there was one. Soon there will be a tweet about how he built up the church's welfare system for us.
Yes. Anyway, you got to go get on and read.
Oh, this one's funny, too. I hope the Relief Society president took an inventory of Donald's cupboards before she signed him up for groceries.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. So, yes, we're going to encourage you to go to the Facebook page and read all of these comments because they're hilarious.
They're hilarious. It's the most entertaining thing about him coming, right?
Yes, exactly.
Got to find the humor.
Exactly. Well, and the other thing that's interesting about him coming is, so last night, my husband was so pleased with this picture that the president had been to Welfare Square and that it was making national news, Welfare Square, and the good things the church had done. And I had to go, honey, he's not the first president to pay homage in Salt Lake City.
Right.
There have actually been a number of presidents who have paid homage in Salt Lake City. And, of course, leave it to the Deseret News to tell us who those presidents are.
Oh, well, how timely.
So the first one that stopped in Salt Lake City was President Ulysses S. Grant. And It says here that while riding a train from Ogden to Salt Lake City, the 18th president was introduced by George Q. Cannon, a member of the church's first presidency, to the president prophet Brigham Young, who said, "President Grant, this is the first time I have ever seen a president of my country." So Brigham Young got a visit.
Very nice.
And then we had in 1890, Rutherford B. Hayes paid a visit. And it looks like he met with LDS President John Taylor during his visit. Mm-hmm. In 1891, a year later, we had President Benjamin Harrison. And 1903, Theodore Roosevelt, Teddy mm-hmm. Roosevelt, came to Salt Lake City. 1909 and 1911, William Howard Taft, he made two visits. 1919, we had Woodrow Wilson. 1923, we had Warren G. Harding. 1932, President Herbert Hoover. And then what's really interesting is from 32 until the 40s,
right,
we got no one. Hmm. Apparently, Franklin Delano didn't, Salt Lake wasn't a big deal for him.
Not interested.
Not interested. But Harry Truman, who happened to be our father's favorite president, he did three visits in 1945, 1948, and 1952. And then we get into the 60s. And essentially since the 60s, since President John F. Kennedy, every president except for one has come to Salt Lake City to pay homage to the power brokers that are the LDS Church.
Which one? Who's missing?
So, well, let me just go through the list. So we have President Kennedy, and he came in 1963. In fact, he came just 2 months before his assassination. And he met, of course, with David O. McKay, who was the president there. And he spoke in an overcrowded Salt Lake Tabernacle on September 26th, giving an address that he personally considered to be one of his best. So I think that's fascinating. I had no idea that they turned the pulpit of the tabernacle over to the president, and he spoke.
Wow.
And then in 64, we had Lyndon Johnson. He had a 30-minute meeting also with President McKay. And he says, "I could not fly over Utah without stopping to visit President McKay. I always feel better after I have been in his presence." And that's from Lyndon B. Johnson, so I think that that's great. In 1970, Richard Nixon came to visit. And let's see if it says who he met with. I don't see it immediately, but he came to visit in 74. We had President Gerald Ford. He had a meeting with LDS leaders, and then he visited the church facilities at the Salt Lake Tabernacle, and he also went to BYU. So in 78, we had Jimmy Carter. He came to town. In 82 and 84, Ronald Reagan was there, and he met with, looks like he met with President Hinckley, and he also met with Thomas Monson, who was the then a member of the Quorum of the Twelve.
Okay.
So in 91 and 92, President H.W. Bush came. Mm-hmm. So that would be Bush Sr.
Okay.
And he met with, he spent 40 minutes with President Hinckley and President Monson. And then here's the president who really likes the state of Utah, George W. Bush. He visited four times in 2002, 2005, 2006, and 2008. Hmm. He came to town. He had to make a lot of visits because he had to make up for the president in between him and his father, who never came, which would have been...
Oh, it was Clinton.
William Jefferson Clinton.
Okay.
Couldn't be bothered to come to Utah to pay homage. So, anyway, we even had President Barack Obama. He came in 2015. And he, of course, met with the first presidency. He met with President Eyring.
Huh.
And he actually stayed the night in Salt Lake City. And now, of course, we have President Trump. So,
well, there you go. Add him to the list.
And the church has a very long history when presidents come to town of meeting with the presidents.
Right.
So
very interesting.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. So the next article we have today is... famous people who have been given a Book of Mormon.
Oh.
And this was done by LDS Living. It was actually kind of a slideshow, a little bit of clickbait to click through there. And it had 20 people who are famous who have been given a Book of Mormon. I thought this was interesting because when I first saw this headline, I thought it would be kind of speculation. You know, you hear rumors all the time. But
faith-promoting rumors.
Yes. But clearly they did their research, and all of these appear to be confirmed cases.
So legit received a Book of Mormon.
Received a Book of Mormon. Whether or not they read it, who knows?
Or it went on the shelf. Who knows?
So there were a lot of political leaders. There was Elvis.
Okay, that begs the question. So did the first presidency pawn one off on Trump when he was there to go, President Trump? Let me just give you a Book of Mormon while you're here.
I don't know. You'd think that they would do that with every president that right?
I think I recall that they I don't know if they did it when he came, but maybe they went to Washington, D.C., that they presented Barack Obama with a whole family history pedigree thing.
The genealogy
yes, thing.
They like to do that.
Mm-hmm. So maybe they do that instead of a Book of Mormon.
They probably do. So
go on.
So lots of political leaders.
Well, you know, if they did give him a Book of Mormon, he'd probably take credit for writing it.
Probably.
Okay. All right. Sorry. I'll let you finish your article.
Let's see who else. Oh, Muhammad Ali, Rainn Wilson from The Office.
Oh, Dwight.
Yeah, Dwight's sister missionaries gave him a Book of Mormon. Like, they were just out tracting and they saw him.
They ran into him and said, here, have a Book of Mormon.
Johnny Depp, who we've talked about before,
has
had run-ins with missionaries. Snoop Dogg. I loved this one. This one was hilarious. Also, sister missionaries who found out he was at a Little League game that they were at because he had a kid or a relative in the game.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we're going to do this. And they hunted him out.
They stalked Snoop Dogg at the Little League game to give him a Book of Mormon.
They were not going to pass up this opportunity.
That's right. So how do you write that on your weekly report to the president?
I don't know.
I stalked the black rapper.
There have been a couple of different popes. Let's see.
Now, if you're a pope, what do you do with the Book of Mormon if you're a pope?
I don't know. I assume you graciously accept. And
Well, and who knows? Because a lot of those popes, they do a lot of, you know, religious studying.
That's
so perhaps
true.
Maybe they've even read it. Who knows?
They might have already. But here are a couple of my favorite stories that I read. The little blip about Elvis, it said that a fan handed him the book, like, through the gates of Graceland back in the 70s. Handed it to him through the gates. And then it says that it took quite a journey, and it finally passed through the hands of Alan Osmond before finally ending up at church headquarters. And
the Elvis Book of Mormon?
The Elvis Book of Mormon.
Now, how do we know this is the actual Elvis Book of Mormon?
He wrote in it.
So and Elvis wrote in
Elvis
the Book of Mormon.
Wrote notes, handwritten notations were reportedly made in that Book of Mormon.
Like handwritten notations on the scriptures?
Yes, including there's a personal line about his wife that says Priscilla needs to read this.
Oh, get out.
Yes.
Okay, so it made its way back to church headquarters?
Somehow Alan Osmond got it, and then he gave it to church headquarters, it sounds like.
Huh.
So this Book of Mormon made the rounds. It sounds like he at least read part of it.
Interesting. So somewhere in those vaults, those granite vaults that we hear about that are up in the mountains, tucked away is the Elvis Book of Mormon.
But I want to know, has his work been done?
Oh, well, you know, he hasn't been dead 100 years.
Oh, that's right.
So probably not. A little longer. Unless he has a relative that like is a direct line connection that's Mormon that could do his work.
Forgot about those rules.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's my other favorite story. Prince Charles was given a Book of Mormon.
Oh, my.
And guess who he was given a Book of Mormon by?
I have no idea.
Alex Boyer.
Oh, really? Yeah. So how is Alex hanging with the prince?
So this story cracked me up. This was like several years ago, probably 8 to 10 years ago. And Alex Boyer had written about this in a Deseret News article several years ago about his experience. But I guess he was overseas and he was performing for a charity event, charity called the Prince's Trust. And one day during the tour, when they were done performing, someone comes running down and says, "The prince is coming. He's on his way. Like, he's coming to meet us.
Like,
and
he's coming. He's coming. He's coming. The prince is coming."
So, and his helicopter is coming. So Alex Boyer, like less than a week before this, had received a Book of Mormon from his ward mission leader.
Get out of town.
Giving him a challenge to give it away. So Alex Boyer...
No, you're making this up.
No, it sounds like I'm like one of those Mormon stories, but he personally wrote this account in a Deseret News article.
Okay. So he's got the challenge from the ward mission leaders. Give the Book of Mormon away.
So he knows the prince is on his way. He feels like he wants to run up to his hotel room and change. He goes up, he sees the Book of Mormon sitting on the desk or whatever, and he grabs it. He's like, "Oh, I got to take it with me." So he takes it down.
So I'm wondering, when he grabs it, is he thinking he's going to give it to the prince? Or is he just like, you never know when you may need this.
I think he's thinking maybe he'll have a chance to give it to the prince. So it says he takes it down. There's kind of like a receiving line for the prince. And he goes and he shakes everybody's hands. And Alex said that he just was tongue-tied. He couldn't come up with the right words to say. He didn't give it to him. And it's in his backpack still. So then he says the prince is like, they're walking out to board the royal helicopter to leave.
Yes.
And he just feels the spirit and the prompting. And he's like, "I missed my chance. This is my chance. I got it." He flags him down.
So now he's chasing after the prince.
Well, he's waving his arms around and shouting like, "Wait, wait, wait," which... Aren't there like all kinds of rules with those royal people?
Oh, there's like a huge royal protocol.
You don't scream. I also think you're not supposed to give them gifts. I think I've heard that, at least with the queen.
Yeah. I think that like maybe flowers or something like that. But yeah, you're not supposed to give them gifts. And I'm pretty sure screaming and waving and yelling at them, it violates all sorts of protocol.
So yeah, he's admits it was embarrassing. He waves him down, and then he goes to reach in his backpack to get the Book of Mormon, and the security guys flip out because they're like, "What's this crazy guy doing?" But he pulls out the book, and somehow he manages to get it. It says Prince Charles accepted the book graciously, saying he thought it would prove some interesting reading.
Well,
isn't that a good story?
That is a good story, and good for Alex. And can you just imagine the next priesthood opening exercises when they're saying, "Hey, has anybody given a Book of Mormon away?"
It talked about that in the story. He said that he reported back at his ward that he had done this, and nobody believed him.
Well, of course not.
Until they saw there. I guess there's like a video on the news or something that showed him like flagging. I don't know.
Oh my god!
There was video proof of this somewhere.
Then there was some repenting going on
he was able to prove his story
for not believing him. Yes. Okay, that's a good one.
That was my favorite. But interesting list. Go take a look. Click through it if you want to see who else has been given a Book of Mormon.
All right. So our next story was actually written by our own Jeff Openshaw, and it's on the This Week in Mormons page, and it's about the San Diego Temple, because it was reportedly threatened by a pro-ISIS group, and the police descended on the temple. So apparently, sometime around the beginning of December, there was a picture, and Jeff doesn't show the picture or link to the picture because he doesn't want to lend any credence by posting it. Mm-hmm. But I did happen to see the picture posted on a on another Mormon page today.
Oh, you got to see it. I didn't get to see it.
I did. So the picture is of the San Diego Temple. Uh-huh. And behind the San Diego Temple, there's all this kind of orangish, yellowish stuff to kind of look like maybe the temple's on fire. I mean, there's no, you don't see any fire, but it gives that kind of amber glow. And then there is a person who is wearing, you know, some sort of a Middle Eastern kind of head covering, and you see the top of some sort of an automatic weapon. And then at the bottom, it says like coming soon, and there's like blood splatters on the coming soon. And so I don't know where this was originally posted, but it was posted somewhere, generated some attention. And so, of course, the San Diego Police Department descended on the temple just to kind of check things out. The article that I read, that the one that wasn't by Jeff, but the one I read today, talked about that they were combing the grounds. The San Diego Police Department, however, would not confirm whether their increased presence on the temple grounds had anything to do with the image. Mm-hmm. And also, apparently, the local FBI office, they would not confirm they said that they were not aware of any specific or credible threats to the community. So, you know, they have to investigate this type of stuff, obviously, when it comes up. And I guess it did not interrupt the business of the temple. The church was unaware of, they didn't receive any direct threat. And so business at the temple carried on as usual, just with a few more squad cars outside.
Right.
So.
Very interesting.
Maybe they should try a different target. Okay.
Probably. All right. Next article we have, this is another LDS Living article. It was titled, Four Reasons Mormons Are Always Late.
Okay.
So this was about, you know, we always joke about Mormon Standard Time.
Yes.
And the writer of this
MST.
Article. Yes. Writer of this article was saying, this is a real problem, people.
Yes.
Get it together. So these are the four reasons that were listed. First reason they gave is leaders are enabling this behavior.
Okay.
And this is so true. I'm firmly behind this.
Okay.
Like, I've been in a ward where they start 5 minutes late because they know nobody's there.
Yes.
And then I've been in a ward where they say, we're starting on the hour, even if there's only five people there. And then typically people
get it. Yeah. Because the problem with starting 5 minutes late is everybody knows you're going to start 5 minutes late. So now they're 10 minutes late.
Right.
And the problem just snowballs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it talked about. It's just this vicious cycle.
So your current ward, are they a start on time or they start a 1 or 2 minutes after the hour?
They're pretty on time. I feel like they're pretty on time. You know what they're really on time with is Sunday school. They do not mess around with Sunday school.
Really?
And I always have a hard time getting to Sunday school on time.
Oh.
So now I always am the one like walking shamefully into the room.
Oh.
Trying to find a seat. So...
Well, you know, I have to say in my ward, you know, the bishop is adamant about getting up there on the hour and starting. When I taught gospel doctrine, which is a very sad thing, I don't think we've talked about this.
That's right.
Well, I didn't get released from my gospel doctrine calling. I taught gospel doctrine for about 3 years. I got reassigned.
Right.
I got reassigned from gospel doctrine to the 17-year-olds.
To the teenage crowd.
To the teenage crowd. So I now teach the teenagers, and I'm very, very sad because I really did enjoy my gospel doctrine calling. In fact, I don't know if I told you this. So the bishop calls me in to give me this gospel doctrine calling, you know, 3 years or so ago. And I look at him and I kind of laugh and I said, okay, bishop, let me just make sure I understand this. So you are going to give a mouthy female lawyer a 45-minute platform every other week with a captive audience. He kind of gulped and went, why, yes, I am. And I said, okay, I just want to be clear you understand what you're getting.
Right, but you survived 3 years without getting fired.
I survived 3 years without getting fired. I hopefully there
you
was...
behaved yourself.
That is so hard. I tried not to, you know, impute any false doctrine or the gospel according to Tiffany. But I do want to give a shout out to Sunday School Bonanza, which is a Twim production.
Right, you use that a lot.
Because right? I would always listen to Sunday School Bonanza, and I took a lot of ideas from Sunday School Bonanza and incorporated them into my gospel doctrine lesson, and I really loved teaching that. So now I have the 17-year-olds, and that's just a whole different playing field. But back to the being on time.
Did your gospel doctrine start on time?
My gospel doctrine did not start on time because here was the problem, okay? Yeah. If I were to start, so, you know, sacrament meeting gets out at 10 after. So theoretically, I should be starting gospel doctrine at like 15 after, maybe at the latest 20 after.
Right.
The problem is people linger longer and chat. And so if I were to start then, I would literally have five people in the room.
Right.
Which the problem with that would be is if I were just up there flapping my jaws lecturing, that wouldn't be so bad. But I always tried to teach my gospel doctrine class with a lot of questions.
Right.
And so if I've only got five people in there, it's kind of difficult to get the discussion ball rolling.
Makes it tricky.
So it was usually about 25 after before I'd start the gospel doctrine.
Yeah. See, so. And that's what I'm used to. But yes. The ward I'm in right now, they get on it with gospel doctrine. So
does that make people come? So like they're there?
I think it does. I think people are faster.
Yeah.
Although people like me with kids have a hard time being fast.
Well, and now with the teenagers, I have to go herd them all into class, you know? I get two or three herded in and two or three disappear and I get two or three more herded in.
That is the trick with the teenage crowd. Oh,
it's like cats.
They like to switch classes too.
Oh, they do. And the kids in my ward are notorious for that. They go where the feeding trough is good.
I think that is a universal teenage Sunday school problem. Whoever has the best treats has the biggest class.
Or the most entertaining teacher.
Right.
You know, and I get, they're supposed to go to their right class, but, you know, would you rather have them in A class or screwing around outside?
Right.
You know, I'd rather have them in a class.
It's tricky.
Even if it's not the right one. Okay, so
back to the article. So other reasons that it states that Mormons are always late. Number two, kids. We always blame our kids.
Exactly.
Yeah. I always blame my kids. Well, number three reason is calling and responsibilities. It just talks about how, you know, we juggle so much, especially on Sunday. We want to quick say hi to the person we visit teach. Yes. We have to drop off materials to somebody here. We have to go to a meeting there. And sometimes we let that get in the way. Yeah. And then,
okay, I am so guilty of that on Sunday, but not so much with like other members. Uh-huh. It's just, so we have 1 o'clock church. And so there are several things that I want to do before I get out the door for 1 o'clock church.
Right.
So I always have the best of intentions. And I should say, generally speaking, I'm mostly on time. My husband would say I'm late because my husband's philosophy is if you're not there at 10 to the hour, you're late.
Oh.
And so, but I'm always wanting to like, okay, do I have everything in the oven that I need for dinner?
Right.
I need to switch the laundry out, you know, put the stuff in the dryer and get a new load in the washer so that can wash while we're at church, and just little things like that, and then grabbing things that will delay me from actually leaving when I want to leave.
Yes. So things like that, they said, are a common problem.
Yes.
And then the last reason that they gave Mormons are always late is priorities. They said, we just need to prioritize better.
Oh.
It was a little harsh.
It was a little harsh. It's true. He did say, are you late for work? Are you late for the movies? If you can make it on time for those things, then you ought to prioritize church and always be on time for church.
Ouch.
I know. I think my husband Darren would go, amen.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. What's next?
Next one is there is a dating app that teamed up with Studio C, and this is hilarious.
Oh, this one was good.
So there is this video and it is called Going Home Single, A Very Mormon Holiday. And it starts out with this young woman knocking on her parents' door. She comes in, her parents are like, oh, we're so happy to see you. We have a date for you for dinner. And so she sits there and she does not like the guy. And so a cheesy couple or her friend suggests that she needs to use this dating app. It's called Mutual. And she proceeds to swipe through potential matches. Apparently, this dating app is set up like Tinder.
Right. I keep hearing about this. I think it's the latest, greatest thing.
And I do not know anything about Tinder. I'm obviously not in the dating environment right now. But apparently, you swipe and things like that for Tinder. But there is this video, Going Home Single, A Very Mormon Holiday. Go look it up. Go watch the video. It's hilarious.
It's really very clever. And the Studio C people always make clever things.
So, yes.
Yeah. Go check out the video. It's funny.
Yes.
All right. Next story we have. Oh, this is our final story. This one was fun. This is about a guy. His name is Dave Jungheim. and he has made giant Lego creations.
Huge.
Like really, really big. Yes.
Like Lego, what is it? Legoland in California big.
Yes, that kind of scale. So he made a giant, his first one that he did was the Salt Lake City Temple.
Yes.
And I believe it sits in the BYU bookstore right now.
It does. I guess it's, what, about like 6 feet high? Yeah. Or it's huge.
Huge. The pictures are amazing. Yes. Everybody needs to get on this guy's website and check it out.
So he kind of just did that for fun because yeah. Legos were a hobby.
He did it for fun. He got a bunch of attention.
Yes.
And now it's still a hobby because he still has a full-time job, but now he is getting, like, people are commissioning him
to build Lego
to
creations.
Build Lego things. So he says he's working right now on another temple for another guy that he just finished, another Salt Lake temple. But not only is he doing the temple, he's doing all of Temple Square.
He is.
So he's
and that's like a commissioned project, yeah. The Temple Square project.
Yeah. So he's doing the tabernacle, the church office buildings, the Joseph Smith Memorial yes. Building. Several of those things, he estimates it will take 10 years to complete.
Temple Square and Lego Park.
Can you imagine?
Well, the other thing, too, is he said that it's going to be modular pieces because it's going to be right. So big that you can't move it. And so it's going to be kind of modular pieces that will fit together. And I think he has the tabernacle done because he talks about in the article running into some of the same construction issues for the domed roof of the tabernacle that the original construction right. People ran into, just on a smaller scale.
Oh, goodness. Isn't that funny? So I know these things are amazing, though. And like this is like every boy's dream, right?
Yes.
To make a career out of...
Of playing with Legos.
Building Legos or the make only a other... career out of video games.
Exactly. Exactly. Either one, it's about the same.
That's right. So it did say, because I was thinking, how in the world can he do this? It does say that he is a former jet turbine engine mechanic and a former pilot for the military. So yes. He's definitely got some engineering,
he's
mechanical
got that left
background.
Brain thing yeah. Going on combined with the creative
yes,
right brain.
For sure. Okay, the other thing that I would love to know is his first Salt Lake Temple that he built.
Yes.
How much did it cost? Because Legos are stinking expensive.
Oh, that is a really good question.
I'm just so
especially
curious.
Given how big it is.
Yeah, just materials alone. Because he gets on and like custom yeah. Orders these yeah. Lego pieces. He designs it all before yeah. He orders what pieces he needs. I just can't imagine how much does this cost.
Oh, that is a very good question. Anyway, the article that we will link to has a site that you can go on and you can see pictures of a lot of his Lego creations. And they're really fun to look at.
Yeah, it's really cool. Very cool. And he's, you know, he's gaining fame, not, you know.
Popularity
for his creations. And
as well he should.
And most of them are religious right now, religious-based yes. Art that he's doing with his Lego. And it's just, they're pretty cool. So.
All right. Favorite things.
Oh, favorite things. Do you want me to go first?
Why don't you go first? Okay. You tell us your favorite thing this week.
My favorite thing this week is some Christmas music. We already talked about unique Christmas music when you were talking yes. About the groups from Provo. On my list is the Lower Lights Christmas music. And this has been out for several years.
I love Lower Lights Christmas music.
They have two Christmas CDs. If you haven't heard of the Lower Lights, they are a band out of Utah that is very bluegrass.
Yeah.
Lots of instruments. So talented. And they just do unique arrangements of, they do hymns, but they also have two Christmas music CDs that I just love. They're yeah. Unique. They're different than what you hear on the radio and just great music. So Lower Lights Christmas CDs, that's my favorite thing this week.
Oh, I so give two thumbs up because it's like we talked about earlier. The Christmas songs are very familiar and it's always fun to hear kind of a unique or different musical take on them.
Right. So. Yeah.
Okay. So my favorite thing this week is the Facebook Marketplace.
Oh.
Have you ever heard of the Facebook Marketplace or tried it?
I've heard of it. I have not partaken.
Okay. Well, I decided a couple of weeks ago that I was going to partake. So the kids were kind of cleaning out some of their toys that they don't use anymore because my youngest is 10. And so I had several toys that were in really good condition. You know, I'd spent a lot of money on them to begin with. And, you know, I wanted them to go to a new home. One was a Playmobil castle that my daughter uh-huh. Had. And then I have a Playmobil ship that my son had, and then a bunch of motorized battery powered Thomas trains, and then a ton of dress up clothes that my daughter had.
Oh.
And so what I decided to do is I took pictures of everything and I put them on Craigslist under toys. Uh-huh. Because if you're outside of Utah, you use Craigslist. If you're in Utah, Craigslist is like too slimy and everybody uses KSL.com. But I put them on Craigslist, but then I also uploaded them to this Facebook marketplace. Uh-huh. And so it identifies your area. And so it showed the marketplace showed my pictures and what I was offering to sell to people within a 40-mile radius of me. So I put in my city of Eagle, and anybody uh-huh. within a 40-mile radius could see that. I did not get one bite off of Craigslist. I sold all the stuff off of Facebook Marketplace, and two of the items I sold within the hour, you know, of putting really? Them up there on Facebook Marketplace.
So this must be the way to do it.
It's the way to do it.
This is making sense to me now, because since we have moved to Boise, whenever I get on Craigslist to look for something that I'm looking for, it seems like the selection is hardly anything. Yeah. And I just thought it was because Boise was smaller, but maybe it's because everybody's selling things on Facebook.
I don't know, but they have categories, and so you can search by categories on this Facebook marketplace. And then what you do is if you see something you like that you want to buy, it says there's a button that you click, I'm interested, and it direct messages me on Facebook, the person who's interested in it.
Like private message?
Private message. Okay. And so then we communicate back and forth via private message. Uh-huh. So it's not like you post on the item saying, I want this. No, I posted first. I want this.
Okay.
They private message you, and then you can make arrangements about when and where you want to meet. It was so easy.
Okay.
I loved
it. And I like it's in the same place as your Facebook. It's like one-stop shopping.
It is like one-stop shopping.
You can Facebook, you can sell your stuff.
I ended up making about $100 selling these old toys. Uh-huh. And so I cleaned out my house, had some cash. Some kids are having the benefit of really fun stuff that my kids had. So I'm giving the two thumbs up to the Facebook Marketplace.
Well, that's good news. I'm going to have to check it out.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that concludes for today.
I think that's it. Thank you so much for listening. And if we don't, you know, if we don't show up again before the holidays, we wish you all a wonderful Christmas season.
We do. We wish you a very Merry Christmas and a happy and safe New Year. And I think it'll probably be into 2017 before we record again, or 2018.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. So,
be sure to go visit the This Week in Mormons website, Facebook page, Instagram. We have an Instagram, Twim Sisters.
Yes.
Look us up. Connect. We'd love to connect with you. And if you're willing to support on Patreon, Twim would love your support. Just a tiny donation, anything helps keep the website going and
keep the podcast up.
Yep.
And keep us entertaining you. Thanks, Twim Nation.
Thanks.